and I'm going to start taking you through that. Given that we were trying to prepare in relation to whether some of the committee members were familiar with the CCMA or not, we've just tried to give you a little bit of background in relation to who we are and what we do, and to talk about what the vision of the CCMA is, that we have a vision, and that it's set out here for you to see in your presentation. I'm going to try and stick to your time brief that you gave us earlier, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But it's taking the principles of the Labour Relations Act and trying to ensure that we put them into a very specific time frame and process and explain what we're going to do in relation to that. We also have a mission which sets out what our purpose is. And it's important for us to emphasize to all that we see our main mission as to promote social justice and fairness in the workplace, and that we're going to do that through certain ways and certain methods. And we try as a management team to ensure that the CCMA delivers specifically on that. We also have specific values that we want to try and entrench in the organization, given the nature of work we do and certain aspects of things that arise in our society. And so we spend time every year evaluating what the values are and going through them. So because we have commissioners who deal very specifically with specific work, we deal with integrity, honesty, and ethics, the importance of diversity, transparency and openness, quality, accountability, responsibility, and commitment, respect, and trust. I thought that it would be appropriate to just spend a few minutes taking you through what the functions of the CCMA are. However, for those committee members who feel that they need some refreshing of that, it is in the annual report that we've handed out to you in a little bit more detail, on the first page, in fact, which is really a summary of what the Labour Relations Act says the functions of the CCMA are. So the first one is, very importantly, is to conciliate workplace disputes. The second one is to arbitrate disputes that remain unresolved after conciliation. The third one is to facilitate the establishment of workplace forums and statutory councils. Then to compile and publish information and statistics about the activities of the CCMA. Then also to consider applications for the accreditation and subsidies of bargaining councils and accredit private agencies and maybe give them subsidies as well. Supervise ballots for trade unions and employer organizations. And to give training and advice on the establishment of collective bargaining structures, workplace restructuring, consultation processes, termination of employment, employment equity programs, and dispute prevention. That, at a very high level, summarizes what I would describe as the main mandate of the CCMA. Just to give you an insight into how it functions, as you mostly know, the CCMA functions in terms of its governing body. That is its current structure. It is a chair, and then it's made up of the three main social partners, organized labor, organized business, and the state. And the members that are there are reflected on the diagram that's set up. In relation to the organizational structure, there is the director, which is myself, and then the executive committee, who are basically present with me today, represented there in relation to all the different functions that they have. And you will see in relation to operations, convening for senior commissioners and affairs times 10. Those are the provincial heads in each province. The Gauteng province, however, is divided into two, where we have Johannesburg and Tshwane, and they, therefore, we have 10 instead of the 9 provinces. And they would also be the people who run the operations of the CCMA in each of those provinces. So in a very, very quick summary, and just to try and put you all in a situation where you're familiar with some of the work of what we do, that's just a summary of what the work of the CCMA is. When we came to the end of our previous strategy, we spent a long time reviving and re-looking at our strategy. And we developed a strategy in our current strategy known as the social strategy, meaning to revive and reawaken. And part of the points around that was to try and look at, was the CCMA fulfilling the mandate that the LRA originally intended it to do? And should we actually continue operating in the way we were? And so we specifically tried to look at what we've done historically, and we built on our previous plans, and we tried to have some continuity. And then we also try to make sure we set specific goals, specific focus areas for the next 3 years. We've just started the final and third year of the current social strategy, and we are going to give you a little bit of a report up to the midterm of the second year in this presentation. The intention of this is to ensure that we use our resources as allocated to drive the CCMA appropriately and to make sure that we have the correct and appropriate performance and delivery of the CCMA to the social partners who we serve and deal with it in that process. We also felt in analysing what we were doing that to some degree some parts of the CCMA weren't operating together, and part of this is to make sure we form a single organisation and we work as a team and that we link with other organisations to make sure that we deliver on our mandate in that process. In doing this and in devising this plan, we went through quite an extensive consultation process, which included both the internal consultation with all the staff as well as the external consultation with both our governing body and stakeholders. The strategy is set up with very specific areas. It has four strategic focus areas, which basically deal with the first one being the importance of repositioning the CCMA in the labour market. And the importance of that is to make sure people are aware of the CCMA and that they understand what we do, and make sure that our staff and the people who come there experience social justice, and when they've been there, they have their dignity restored, and that's the focus of the processes that we focus on. We also wanted to have a high-performance, high-impact delivery of compliance services, but where we also, in doing that, balance the quality of the service with the quantity. We also wanted to make sure that the organization was planning for the future and it could meet the future strategic needs, because that was one of the things that constantly happens in the CCMA. It's always chasing its tail because new issues arise. And then, obviously, finally, an internally looking process, which is to enhance and entrench internal processes and systems to make sure we use the resources that we get given appropriately. From that, we've developed three specific goals, and underneath that there is a specific scorecard. And so I'm going to take you through these goals, and then I'm going to tell you what our scorecard says in relation to those goals, and then I will give you, through each point, an update of what we've done on each goal, and what we've achieved, and what we haven't achieved so far. So the first goal is to ensure that we promote social justice through the professional delivery of services while ensuring compliance with legislation at all times. The second one is to ensure we have user-friendly, quality services that are delivered with speed. And finally, that we maintain operational effectiveness while ensuring services are cost-effective. Now, how we've dealt with that is that we have put that into a scorecard, which at the end of each financial year we analyze, and obviously at a midterm level. And they are under the three goals. Now, what we have done in relation to that is we've used a very performance-measured system based at looking at a glance that we've got a robot system. Essentially, it's green for yes, we've achieved the target. Orange is caution, amber, yes, we're nearly there, or maybe we've achieved it. And red, we haven't achieved the target in the year set. What you see before you is goal one, with the first goal being that in 2010, the external perception of the services delivered by the CCMA will have improved. Now, what we wanted to do, what we're saying from that is, from whatever the baseline is by a certain percentage. The second column indicates there that the target for 2010 was to be the baseline plus whatever we improve. And 2007-2008 financial year, we tried to determine what that baseline was of the external perception of the services of the CCMA. And as you can see in brackets there, there is 68%. So we have determined that, we achieved that goal, and we are therefore giving ourselves a green traffic light. We gave ourselves for that. Then just to take you through so I don't have to come back and make it quicker, is that for midterm to the last financial year, we had planned a new customer satisfaction survey based on the experience of the previous process, and we had a tender out to try and award this to someone to ensure that we could measure this more specifically going forward. Again, under the first goal, which was promoting social justice through the professional delivery of services, is that by 2010, we want to make sure that the CCMA is recognized as a proper market leader in the field of its own continuous professional development for labor law, and make sure we define standards for training and certifying providers of training and ensuring we conduct training. We have some experience in relation to trying to define our role and define our role whether we wanted to be involved in CETAS, the Works in Relation to the Skills Development Act. So we had said that the targets there would be defined. But for 2007 and 2008, we certainly began a long process of engagement, and we set up the processes we were going to undertake, ensuring we tried to meet that goal. Hence, we gave ourselves AMBER as a caution. For the midterm last year, September, we said that the groundwork for that work had been completed, and the process to develop our commissioner panelist training into a properly accredited course was underway. That essentially deals with the items under the first goal. The second goal, which is probably the area that people are often most interested in, which go right to the heart of some of the CTMA's deliverables, which is ensuring user-friendly quality services that are delivered with speed. And we said that firstly, by 2010, we wanted 70% of all disputes to be settled at the conciliation phase. So the target was in 2010, we want 70% of cases settled in conciliation. Now obviously, we set targets to build that up, and we said that in 2007-8, we want to meet the 60% target, and in fact we met 61%. So as you can see in the next column, we've given ourselves a green traffic light, which says yes, we achieved that. And then in relation to the following year, we had hoped that we would achieve 65 or 70%, and halfway through the year we're at 64, so we were 1% away from achieving the 65. So we've got a caution right there, which is orange and amber. But we were still pleased that we're still improving and going in the right direction. The next issue would be that by 2010 there will be a reduction, a material reduction of cases referred to the Labour Court, and we'd have to, in doing this, have to determine certain baselines. So we said that we would like to get the baseline to be something less 21%. Now the reason that 21% comes in is that the first thing that we had to do in the year of 2007 and 2008 was work out what is the baseline of cases that go to the Labour Court and are reviewed by the Labour Court and what they are. So we got into that, we worked that out after using all our statistical processes, and that came out to be 21%. So as you can see there, there is a green light, and we achieved that. The intention is, in 2008 and 2009, up to midterm, we would start doing a reduction, and we certainly had reduced them by the mid-year. They were down to 19%. When we came to the end of the financial year last year, we realized that this measure wasn't quite on the button for everything, so we actually added a new measure in, and that we also then said that we needed a material reduction in the non-compliance of arbitration awards and settlement agreements. It's an area that we probably experienced a bit of problems, and we haven't to look at this. And that basically means that an individual worker or employee has come to the CCMA, gone through the whole process, an arbitration award has been made on their in their favor, finding that they were unfairly dismissed. And then based on that, they go to the employer and they try and either recover the compensation or get reinstated in the workplace. But the employer basically does not reinstate them, and they're left holding a piece of paper. They then have to follow quite a long, complicated process of getting that award, made an order of the Labour Court, and based on that, they then would maybe get the sheriff of the court to have to attach property and sell it in execution to ensure that they get the compensation that they've been awarded. Firstly, we find that that is highly problematic for workers. It takes a long time, and it's quite a costly process, bearing in mind that the processes the CCMA offer are for free. And secondly, that the process that takes time in the Labour Court doesn't actually ensure speedy access to social justice and allow a worker to be able to deal with the issues. By the time that they've got to the point where the arbitration award is actually executed on, it can be something like 18 months. And that doesn't assist really in the speedy effective cost dispute resolution system that we are trying to install. So what we're trying to do at the moment for this year is to measure that and to deal with it as an issue that is a cause for concern for us, because while we're sitting here and showing you the measures that we've put in place, it's kind of problematic for us if the next step in the process isn't speedy. Then moving on to under the same goal, we also, in dealing with our work, one of the areas when we were identifying our strategy was that we felt that we were experiencing unnecessary errors by some of our staff. So we set a target that we want 0% rework. What we mean by that is that somebody put something down incorrectly, so we have to reserve the process and restart it again. That's firstly costly to the taxpayer, and actually very costly to service delivery, both of the social partners that we serve. So we set a target that by 2010 we wanted it to be 0%. There was some debate in relation to this. Our board feels that this is an overly ambitious target. But in the first year we said we'd reduce it by a certain amount, and we did 7%. So we gave ourselves a, together obviously in judgment, in discussion with the board, a green light. And then secondly, in our midterm, we've done 8% in relation to rework. So we've given ourselves a orange light, which is a caution for amber. We're nearly there, but it's gone slightly up. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we move through the presentation in relation to that. The next thing is that we wanted to make sure also that we will reduce the rework from a baseline that we determine in our first year, because this is also an issue around where we don't have parties coming to cases or people who ignore cases or the processes have been incorrectly set about and they're misusing the process in relation to the CCMA. Obviously, this is a measure that's outside our control, but that's the issue. So the first year, we determined the baseline to be 11%, and then basically what we want to try and do is achieve a baseline of 11% minus 3. We, in the midterm, had achieved 11% of a spill, and so we've given ourselves, in relation to that, an amber caution. The next item is basically an absolute, and we've, in measuring the provincial performance of every province, which I'll show you a little bit later, we put the statutory obligations that the CCMA has as very high measures, and they carry higher weight. And one of the key things is that the CCMA must schedule a conciliation hearing. That's a commission that comes into the CCMA within 30 days of it being received. And so the target is 30 days. Last year we hit the 28-day target and we gave ourselves the green light for that. In the midterm of this year, for this past financial year, we hit 27 days. So obviously, again, we've given ourselves a green light. That's important because it ensures that there's speedy dispute resolution across the country in relation to the cases that are dealt with. We also put that by 2008, which was last year, because we achieved this and we're maintaining that process. Then, again, we're dealing with arbitration. The next item was that in 2010, we wanted to have proper turnaround times for arbitrations. So what this does is it measures the time from the time an employee requests an arbitration to the date of the final outcome of the arbitration. And in terms of the regulations and the law, it's required to do this in 60 days. We achieved it in 42 days last year, again a green light, and we again in our midterm were at 40 days and again a green light. There's much debate around whether this should be reduced, but given the things I'm going to say going forward, we feel very strongly as the management we should sustain it at the level it is for now, because of pressures that it puts on staff. And to ensure that we do, if you remember the second goal I talked about, an important focus area of balancing the quantity and the quality, because it's all very well to be speedy, but you also must deliver a quality service. Then, a very important issue, another statutory compliance issue, and that is, and those of you who have had work and dealings with the CCMA historically will know this, and that is that commissioners need to give arbitration awards within 14 days of the end of the hearing in the CCMA. We've put a lot of work into reducing this. Historically, it has not been dealt with. And what you see here, and I'll show you a little bit later on how it's actually improved over the last 3-4 years, but we've taken it down between 2007 and 2008 from a 6% late awards to 3% late awards. And in the midterm, we were at 1% of the awards in the CCMA only going out late. But we felt that we hadn't met the absolute criteria. There was much discussion on that. So we gave ourselves red for we actually haven't achieved the target. Having said that, the management and the commissioners believe that we've done very, very well in relation to trying to improve what was at about 35% of late awards 3 or 4 years ago. Then the final two measures are very important areas, and let me just focus a little bit on it so I can tell those of you who don't know, and some of you do know, and that is, it's in relation to what are called, it's national disputes, and that's relating to, you'll hear us talk about Section 150 disputes, that's the Section 150 of the Labour Relations Act. That's where there matters, where there are disputes in relation to a strike that is legitimate, but it's been going on for a period of time, and the CCMA can offer to step in and try and resolve the matter in relation to that discussion. Now, the CCMA can offer to step in and resolve the matter based on mutual agreement and consent of the parties. And we see this also as a confidence level indicator and how important it is. When we started the strategy, there hadn't been certain areas dealt with in relation to this. So we set certain targets, which was to, for the first year, to get at least 50% of our matters resolved, which we achieved 43%. And then we improved the target for this last year, and in midterm we were at 63%. Again, because this is an important area and a confidence indicator, we actually separated out these issues, and one is around making sure we make the offers and make the settlement. The other one is actually about getting acceptance of the offers. And that's particularly important to us around seeing that our social partners, in consenting to come to the CCMA in a strike situation, they see the CCMA as an important place where people can come and try and negotiate and find resolution to their disputes. And as you can see, the first year we set a target. I think it was a 55. We met 50% of it, so we gave ourselves an amber. And in the midterm last year, we said it had to be over 60. And we met 61% of it, so we're quite pleased with how we've achieved in relation to that. And we also interpret that as a confidence indicator that our parties and social partners are starting to see the CCMA as playing an important role in the labour market in South Africa. So moving on and still dealing with this goal, moving to the third goal, we need to maintain operational effectiveness of the CCMA, but ensuring that our services are cost-effective. Two issues that we had. It looks effective now, but historically when we drafted the strategic plan, we had a very, very high staff turnover in the CCMA, and we were losing a lot of skills. So we set two targets here. One was to reduce the very, very high turnover of staff, which was at over 28% when we started the strategy, and I came in as a director. And so we determined the baseline, and then we tried to make sure we reduced it. And we obviously achieved that in last financial year, and in the midterm review, we got it to 4%. The other area is to make sure we maintain our key skills, and it doesn't exceed 7%. We determined last year, the last financial year, that the loss of skills management was at 11%, and among commissioners at 6%. Bearing in mind that these are people we train, recruit, and are often recruited out into the labour market, while we accept that's part of our role in our strategy and as part of the governing body's policy, it is also important for us to maintain a happy staff level and ensure we have content employees. And as you can see, in the last halfway through the financial year, commissioner level was 6%, and our national management committee, which is management, was at 5%. Of total staff, we had the skills office at about 4%. But in the two areas that we're focusing on, we're still not necessarily within range. Then moving on, but there are two other very important areas we needed to deal with. The CCMA has historically had different caseload rises and various issues, so we wanted to try and ensure that we could meet our case management, which is our case demands, with the usual resource level, so the organization was appropriately resourced, and so that we actually only have a specific variance, which we said was a 5% variance. So in the first year, we achieved a 3% variance, which we'd set as a target, and then basically in relation to 2008-2009 midterm, you can see we've given ourselves red. It's 32.94%, which is a huge variance on the budget allocated, an area that I'd like just to remember. I'll come back to it a little bit later in the presentation and talk you through why we're flagging that. And in particular then, talk about our budget model. We have a budget model which is 100% funding from the Department of Labor, although we are a public entity, and we wanted to make sure that we worked out what our proper budget model was, and that the unit's cost per each budget was dealt with appropriately, and that we needed to make sure that the funding that we had was 100% of the projected services that we rendered. We achieved about 97% of this in 2007-2008 financial year, and it's gone down quite dramatically in the middle of the year to 85.96%. We've in both occasions given ourselves an amber, which does show that there were some variations in relation to the budgeting process. The final one was around the unit cost for delivery of our compulsory services, which are statutory obligations and not necessarily our add-on services that we give, and again to have a 5% variance. Now, when you look at this historically, and you see that we actually had a minus 14% process in relation to that. Now, anybody normally in an accounting process would see that as quite an exceptional issue. We see that, however, in a different way, and obviously these are audited and it's been seen by auditors and auditor general, that was because of all the other achievements and processes we made in the 2007-08 financial year in improving our actual operational efficiencies. So by improving our operational efficiencies in relation to our scorecard as against the strategy, we were actually able to save money in the organization and use that money elsewhere to ensure that we met some of the targets that we had in relation to that, which allowed us to give extra value add services and to improve the delivery of other things in the organization. Now, key areas that we measure, provinces are measured very specifically on how they operate, and they call these operational efficiencies. And over time, as a committee, you will get to know the importance of this. There's a long, quite detailed slide here, which deals with the operational efficiencies of the CTMA. And perhaps I can just draw your attention to two of those, and we can maybe take questions on them. If you look, for example, at number 6 and number 9, remember I spoke to you about the conciliations heard about the 30 days and the issues of late awards. So the statutory requirement to attempt to conduct all conciliations within 30 days. So in 2005 and 2006, we did that with 7% outside the 30 days. But for the last 3 financial years, basically, and this actually starts to show you up to midterm of this year, it's at 0%. So we've achieved that target well within. So that's important in delivering social justice and speedy dispute resolution, and also making sure we deal with that. Again, in relation to late awards, you'll see from 2005 to the end of the 2009 financial year, 9% of our awards were late in 2005 and 6, and I can tell you if you go back more, it was even more, and now last year it's 1%. So, and just in focusing on that, there's been quite significant improvement. But if you look across the whole set of statistical data that we've given you there, you can see that in general there's quite significant improvement in certain areas in relation to the delivery of ensuring that we deliver a quick and cost-effective dispute resolution service. Within that, I have here for you a comparison of our various offices, and I'm sure some of you are constituency-based, would probably be interested in your various provincial offices and how they've done. As you can see, the column on the left, which is in, doesn't come up so clearly in the colors it's meant to be, I think in your presentations it is, sort of in a dark green, that's the 2007-2008 financial year, and in the lighter green color is 2008-2009 financial year. And as you can see, we're trying very hard to measure our provinces and to get improvement. Only real province that probably didn't achieve as well in that year was Mpumalanga, and we would obviously be working very strongly on that. And for example, we have the various activities that we do in the CTMA, and let me draw your attention to Chane, which is GATW, and that basically is that it went from being a very poor performing province to one of the best performing provinces, and then we would give them, that they acknowledge as a province for improving the output. So what they do in that is that they meet all the criteria that we set in that strategy that I've just taken you through, and their service delivery is very specifically within the range of all those numbers and targets that we set. So that's important in relation to that. That's also partly how we create a little bit of healthy competition in the organization amongst all the people who work for us. That, in a very high-level summary, takes me through some of the organizational issues and the processes. While we were preparing for this and looking at our strategy, we thought it was very important, given the discussion, and also we heard the discussion of TAL with Nedlac earlier this morning, that we should at least address some topical issues with the committee which we thought we should help you. And we certainly accept that it's not necessarily directly related to the strategy, but it is related to how we're going to deal with the strategy and the issues that we may have planned for and that have now put us in a different situation. And that is a special focus, the global economic crisis, and how is that affecting the CTMA? It was interesting to hear the executive director of NASDAQ this morning commenting, and in September this year people started commenting about the economic crisis. I've actually been talking to him from about April. CTMA was saying to everybody, we're really feeling the effects of the world economic crisis. We can see it in our statistics, and we can see that there's going to be big job losses. We need to start doing things about it. We need to start working more closely together to do the work in relation to that. So I think I sometimes say that probably we weren't being listened to enough, but everybody was focusing on various other aspects. But we thought it would be important to show you through, given what's happening, given the process and all the issues that have occurred here. I'm not sure if all of you are aware, but there are two things in the law that deal with retrenchment, which is a dispute and dismissal for operational requirements, and in colloquial term that we use in a trade union is that it is a non-fault dismissal. And what we have here is a large-scale retrenchment, and it's showing you from December 2008 to March 2009 the rise in the number of cases with 50 or more employees in each one of those cases. So the number at the top of each of those columns actually is the number of cases and dealing with employees. So a large-scale retrenchment is dealt with in terms of Section 189A of the Labor Relations Act, and it's got a very specific, quite complex facilitation process. And I know Productivity SA, when they speak later, I have no doubt will talk to you about that. But we've set up with many of our brother and sister organizations in the Department of Labor Stable, particularly ways of trying to make sure that we link workers in this facilitation process to the access that they can have to this, for example, helping them to access GIS more effectively, assisting people with, and for employers getting Productivity SA in to try and look and see if they can help them with reworking their workplace instead of just using cutting workers as the first port of call, rather to look at that as the last port of call and to try and see if there are other ways that you can effectively. I'm summarizing a very, very complex process in about three sentences. But and take it that in simple terms, we have linked in with all the, as many of the Department of Labor related, and we're trying to now move into the trade and industry issues, institutions to try and make sure that our principle is that when we apply the framework agreement, and for those of you who are not familiar with it, the CTMA is actually specifically referred to in that framework agreement and what the CTMA's role is in relation to that, and that is that the CTMA should try and assist workers in this crisis. And we've had as a principle that we don't want anybody to walk away from the CTMA without having somewhere to go or know what to do. We have experiences, for example, of people getting retrenchment packages, giving them to various financial houses, or maybe fly-by-night investors. They lose all their money. So we want to make sure that we can assist as best we can. Obviously, this takes a lot of resources, and we've only got so much limits that we can do in relation to that, but we are trying very strongly to assist in relation to the work that we do here. Starting with and bearing in mind that the first brief is to all commissioners, can we try and prevent and reduce job losses in any way we can. Then the law also deals with Section 189, which is firstly the process that you deal with in relation to facilitation and retrenchment, and then it deals with those of employees less than 50, and this is again a graph which very sharply demonstrates to you the rise of the cases in relation to that kind of issue in the current global economic crisis. What we've done as an organization is normally these would be cases that are scheduled in the normal course and heard as like individual dismissal cases for conciliation and maybe arbitration. We're now trying to, because our statistical analysis has shown and we have seen that quite often and quite commonly the areas that are being hit the most are the small businesses and the employees working in businesses where they employ under 50, under 49 employees. And so we're trying to make sure that we give more time to these cases and we ensure the commissioners facilitate and try as best they can to utilize the time that they have available to try and find constructive solutions. So one of the things we've done is to try to give more time to these cases in a conciliation process because of how they also get followed through. Depending on the process here, if you have a dispute, you can end up I'm going to arbitration, it's by consent, or to labor court, depending what happens in relation to that. And that's also very costly and time-consuming, and doesn't really help the retrenched worker at the end of the day. That is basically a very, very quick flash in relation to those issues. We thought that you would be interested to see the aspect of work, what the various areas of work are. And if you look at what's happened here, you can see in relation to, and you've heard the discussion about the job saved and other work, but there's we're giving you statistics in relation to voluntary retrenchments, forced retrenchments, and total retrenchments. And we're using these statistics over the total number of retrenchments and the job saved. We could say, based on this, and this is obviously December to May at this point, about 30.5% of the workers have come through the CTMA have actually, we've saved their jobs. Okay, not that they haven't been retrenched. Obviously, people have got bigger retrenchment packages and better benefits in addition if they got retrenched. But the process that we are following has actually assisted us and has assisted those workers to that degree. And we think it's important in relation to that. Why am I focusing on this? It is quite well known in relation to labor market economic research that the CCMA has two issues. It mirrors the economy, and there's been quite a lot of work done in the last few years showing that the CCMA caseload directly mirrors the work that is going on in all the economic situation in the country. So what we've seen in the last year is a huge increase in the CCMA's caseload, unprecedented, and which hasn't been seen in the last 5 years. So what I've demonstrated for you here in the next slide is basically the rise in our caseload over the last 4 financial years, and then, in relation to that. So you can see that in 2005 and 6, our caseload was about 125,000 cases a year. At the end of last financial year, 140,400 passed. So you will see that there's quite a significant increase, almost, another 25 or 20,000 cases a year, which is hugely significant in relation to the work we do, and obviously puts strain on the organization, and then also puts strain on the commissioners and strain on the people, because we're obviously setting targets and principles and trying to make sure we meet all those time deliverables that I've just shown you and all the things that we set up for our strategy. And our strategy obviously didn't anticipate the economic decline that we've gone into. So we do put pressure on our staff by that principle happening. But then also what happens, of course, is that we need to look at what's happening with the caseload rise, what happens in relation to our budgetary allocation. And you will see that in a certain period of time, we did get quite a significant budgetary allocation. And then in the last 2 years, the last 2 financial years that have closed, we had not really a great increase, and then there was a small increase this year, and then obviously it was higher and it was reduced. So we're showing you that basically if you look at the figures in relation to 2005 and 6, 197 million, and then you go back and look at the previous slide I showed you in relation to the rise in caseload, if you see the graph and you look at that, not necessarily is our budgeting process rising accordingly in relation to that, because the CCMA is now obviously under siege and had a huge increase in relation to the cases that it's receiving at the moment. Because this is such a topical area and because the CCMA has somewhat been in the spotlight, I wanted to end with two things, and I think that many of you will know, and I think it's important to note that the Honourable President, in his State of the Nation address, very specifically referred to the work of the CCMA and some of the work that I've taken you through. And we've quoted for you what he said, which is that we will support the work of the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration to assist employers and workers to find alternatives to retrenchments through the relevant legal process. To date, CCMA commissioners have saved over 4,000 jobs through facilitation processes and provided ongoing advice and support to retrenched workers. We consider that a huge honour to be mentioned in the State of the Nation address, and we thought we would make sure that you were aware that that was in relation to the work that we've done. Furthermore, I'd like to add to you that some of you might know that the Minister of Labour is at the moment in Geneva at the International Labour Organization, and he also had an opportunity yesterday before the world community to address the world of work community about South African labour laws and what's happening, and he actually also again quoted, and he said, as we speak, from January to March, the CCMA held 124 consultations with companies in distress, and as a result, 4,000 jobs have been saved, and South Africa was honoured by the world for the work that we've done in relation to that. And so we thought it would be nice to show the committee some of the work in relation to that, that even though it's a negative in the context of workers losing their jobs, that there is some recognition for some of the work that has been done by some of the institutions in South Africa. Madam Chair, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Madam. Just for clarity, did you say in your presentation that you have saved 4,000?
Yes.
And then the minister is saying 12,000?
No. The minister said we've consulted with 124 companies and saved 4,000 jobs.
Oh, okay.
Mama, thank you very much, and thank you very much for the wonderful presentation. My point of view is, I'm amongst around the strides that we are making mention of. I think one of the things that we'll have to guard Parliament is that CCMA must not collapse with this current challenge. Because I see a situation where you're going to be dealing with currently there's an increased number of cases that you're dealing with. And your capacity may be, you know, challenged in fact for you to deliver that particular service, and which is very strategic at this point in time. I don't hear you saying anything much to say that with regard to these challenges, this is what we think government should intervene in, either creating more capacity to yourself or calling for, you know, more resources for you to be able to create that capacity. And I think at this budget vote, it will be very necessary to have that understanding. Clearly, when it comes to discharging your duties, I do not have a question. I'm very satisfied, really. But my worry is that this economic meltdown is coming with challenges. Therefore, our response, SCMA, and what we want from yourself is the following. So if you can come up with that, I think when we sort of pass and debate this budget in the House, we are able to pass a very clear message. If the President can make mention of the wonderful work you are doing, the issue will be, if CCMA collapses, then your Parliament, what did you do? Why is not helping? You know, because we want to make sure that capacity is created. And our relationship, in fact, at NADLEC level, relationship with government generally, because here it's about making sure that we're able to save this job and move, you know, with very smoothly, you know, around the challenge. It's a global challenge, but I think what we're appreciating is the manner in which we're engaging ourselves. And I'll repeat that point 20 times, because it's a very interesting, you know, input that you are, or impact that you're making. So I just want to hear that part of what I say. Yeah. Thank you.
Honorable Nivo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for coming late. I don't know what I've missed, but thank you for the CCMA for your excellent presentation. Yes, I do support what the previous honorary member said regarding your work and deploying for your work that's being due. And my concern is that people accessing your service and accessing your work, and I'm talking about people that are deaf. For the labor force, there are so many unfair labor practices. And when deaf people come to talk to me, and I tell them the CCMA are there, but they say they can't get access to the labor court proceedings of the CCMA because there are no sign language interpreters. And I don't see that on your expenditure that a provision are made for accessibility for deaf people. And then people that are not, can't speak English, how do you cover those languages? And other people, do you cover other languages? And then I want to, if you do cover them, then I want to know, are you being supporting sign language interpreters? And the few that we have in this country, that they can go and speak to you and then to present a plan to you. So when an organization for the deaf bring their own interpreters, but the person that is in the organization, they're in a dispute with the organization, that deaf person does not look to the interpreter that the organization brought in. But I just need to make sure that you do make provision in your budget for that. I just must make sure that my constituency is covered and that they do access your services. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matisa.
Thanks, Chair. When one was preparing for this meeting about 2 days ago, one looked into a number of issues. Some of them, of course, may have been raised, but you know, not completed in the way that one would have, you know, proposed they be. First, the issue of the 500,000 jobs. You see, I'm used to 500,000 because I do carry money in the booth. So 500,000. I do, of course I do carry Not once, but many times. Okay. You see, the first, I do carry, you can follow me when you move out, there may be something. You see, the president talks of 500,000 jobs in the next, what's the period again? Now, it becomes, you know, a problem. And I think we need to talk about that. Because we may lose 600,000, but get 500,000. This becomes a problem. I think we need to talk about that. And you are the people that really can really, you know, talk about that. I mean, just to give you an example, and I think, I remember giving this example 2 days ago, Chairperson, of, you know, in the industry, motor industry, where over a period of, you know, 2 months, no, no, 3 weeks, they've lost 117 jobs, and more have been lost in the other industries, textiles and so on. So these are kind of problems, and just to check, they don't know if we can't say they must respond. Just giving you that example. Okay. Now, these few issues, all right? I've adequately gone into the social document, but it does not answer that which I believe are key questions. Although it does well to address operational questions, it does not answer the questions which, for example, I believe the CCMA has not looked into or has done very little to look into. Okay. And I believe that that's the shortcoming. Perhaps we can talk about that. Number one, the issue of the targets. And I think that it's not come up as well. Okay. Whether targets were set and achieved. Whether it's met. What I understand is somewhere you've come up with targets, but I don't hear you saying you have met all those particular targets. I think we need to talk about that. Number two, whether you are sticking to time frame, because those affected, the workers who lose their jobs, are continuously at the mercy of employers. And as a result of that, CCMA, if you are not sticking to the time frame, those who are affected suffer job losses and the general ill treatment by the employer. So the issue, Chairperson, of sticking to the timeline, I think you need to say that to us. Now, a critical point here is how CCMA went with the labor court. Because I didn't hear you really talk about that. I mean, obviously you can talk of the CCMA and not talk of the labor court again. So, please appraise us in so far as the project thing is concerned. Because, you see, CCMA is usually, for example, a correspondent during hearings. But then my problem is, CCMA only attends where its interests are at issue. So can we talk about that? You are a correspondent when you go to the labor court, but we don't hear you saying this is how we believe things have got to be dealt with, and obviously when you talk about the budget, etc., that is one of the things that you should be raising. And secondly, why in dealing with the issue of you versus working with the labor court. And I am saying, you can't obviously, in my own opinion, say that you are doing your work, okay, and you are succeeding without, you know, referring to the labor court, which I do not hear you talking about. You are not informing us of the capacity you raise that a little bit, the capacity of your staff that handle a case, right? Are they properly capacitated? You did talk about that just a little bit, saying we must get staff, etc., etc., but the staff that you have, they have capacity. We hear that you have this kind of thing, capacity, etc. And somewhere, I'll talk even about the corruption. I mean, there's a problem in around Johannesburg where one of your members did things, got money, was not supposed to do that. Of course, it's obvious. And I think we need to talk about that. I'll talk to them, Chair, about that. Because that cannot be allowed. However, the issue of capacity on your part, your members of staff, do you have that? They need to tell us about that. And then the other thing is, how do you intend improving there are delays, and I believe you know that, which are experienced in the awarding of arbitration, right? The awards that have got to, or that are being delivered from the labor court, and that they are delayed. What is this that you are doing? Because once these awards are given, once they are awards from the side of the labor court, after that very, very long process, you still have a very serious problem. What is it that you are doing to deal with that thing? And then the last issue, because again, we're talking about your area of work and the labor court, etc. You did refer a little bit to the issue of the sheriff. Okay? You need to say what you're doing. Because the sheriff services, we need to talk about that versus cost for the unemployed. Right? Because, I mean, once the labor court has come up with this thing, with the words you indicate, and that's what is supposed to happen, the sheriff is supposed to take the papers to where they're supposed to be taken. And, there is a very long process. What is it that you are doing at CCMA? Because, remember, during that particular period of time, the person who has been taken out of a job, does not have any income, etc. Now, what is actually happening? Because that is one other very important area that has got to be looked into. I've not seen this. No, I've gone line by line through the social report, and I've not seen that altogether. Are you able to say something so far as that is concerned? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I happen to have interactions with CCMA, but not throughout the country. It was only limited to housing in Johannesburg in particular. But I think I must say there were administration problems in the past, but when I left and joined, I mean, towards the process of me joining Parliament, there has been improvement. There has been improvement to an extent where if you are referring a dispute to CCMA, within 2 days there will be a response in terms of an SMS if you have also quoted your cell phone number as an official with the break. So I think there is that improvement even in terms of conciliations being taking place within 30 days as stipulated in terms of the labor issues act. So I think some of the things practically we have witnessed some of us, including arbitration processes. Now there's improvement. There's improvement. Just two questions, Chair. One is the on goals for 2010 in particular. The target of 70% where cases need to be settled in the conciliation process. I think it's important if you can speak much on that, because I'm raising this because there are judgments that an applicant for not attending a conciliation, that doesn't mean that the commissioner can dismiss the referral. So taking into account those judgments, how do you intend, because I know people will just refer a dispute, you set a date for conciliation in any way and say, I don't have to go, I will get the certificate and refer the matter for arbitration or the labor court. How are you intending to deal with such situations? Because it's one issue for me that I think that can make you not to achieve the target that you're intending to. Because once a judgment has been given by a court of law, in particular on labor, the area where I have a little bit of understanding, that change the existing law. That's one area. The second one is around commissioners. I'm not complaining about them, you know. Is that I know System A does have full-time commissioners and part-time commissioners. Part-time, I will talk housing because that's where I'm coming from. There's two pieces there. I don't know what the two pieces all over the country. Where you employ services. Now you enter into a contract between CMA and the service provider, which will be Tugiso in your case. How are you intending to do away having, outsourcing, because I would regard, I take that as outsourcing. Now, the judges, you have outsourced what is it that you're supposed to do as the institution. So those are the two questions for me, sir. But I think generally, in terms of the report and targets, which we have spread yourself, I think there is something that is happening. There's something that is happening. I mean, for the first time in 15 years, where the President of the Republic is giving the State of the Nation address. System A is being mentioned to say you have done good on this part. I think that must encourage you and for you to do more. Thanks, sir.
Well, is what is enough?
No, it's not a week to have
it. Was
your hand asked? Yes, it was. I was saying that, you know, the presentation, Toto. Yes. You see, when you read it in isolation of the annual report, you never understand it. So I think, for us members, again, is that, I'm going through the annual report and I look at the details that Honorable Madisha is raising. Fair case, settlement, time frames, and all of that. But that's what I'm saying, that it becomes difficult to read in isolation of this document. So I think if Honorable Madisha will look at that, I think at some point in the committee, just to go through this annual report, in detail, the more detail is inside this annual report here. But just to say that, Chair, the issues that are raised, if one were to be specific, to look at which sections of these jobs that were said, sectors in fact. It may be in the mines, it may be farm workers, it may be which sections that you can say constitute majority of the jobs that were said. But clearly I concur with the colleague that there is quite an improvement. Some of us run some other jobs somewhere. And we are just taken to see the most of it. We sort of, you know, we sort of interact a lot with them. So, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chauke. Ms. Khan, please do answer all the questions. Just treat that explanation from Mr. Chauke in responding to Mr. Madisha as if he has not spoken. He can't speak on your behalf. Chauke, can you raise up your hand? Thank you.
Thank you. That is very much appreciated. I'll start with Anil Toki's first set of questions and then go from there. Firstly, we have embarked on a process at the moment with the counting authority of the CCMA, which is the Department of Labor, and they are very aware of our financial situation. But we felt it was inappropriate to come to this committee in their first briefing and not just flag it as an issue to them, because we are assuming that we will come back with our end of year financial statements and you will need to see the issues in relation to that. So as a organization, we are firstly following the processes that are required of us in terms of the PFMA to address the issues for funding. And let me also say that we have met with a very sympathetic response from the Department of Labor and including the Minister of Labor himself, and they are going to try and assist us, as far as I understand, to the extent that they can, with funding in that process. I may like to ask the CFO if he wants to add anything to that. Okay, he says that he's comfortable that I've covered it all. But yes, obviously, in the context of having a budget vote debate in the Department of Labor and the Department of Labor's budget vote, I would agree with you that one does need to say this. I mean, in a time of economic crisis, labor issues are a huge challenge, and money would obviously be an important aspect to look at. So I wouldn't say you couldn't say anything about that, but I certainly didn't come here to ask you that. Honorable Nivot, thank you very much for your question in relation to that. And I think it's a very important question. I think that firstly, as a management team, we must take up the process that you've raised with us and talk to you about sign language interpreters. We do have access to sign language interpreters, and we do employ, on request from various people, sign language interpreters. We've also sent at least one person on our front desk in each office to a sign language interpreting course. But I wouldn't say that they were experts in relation to that. As we would, we'll probably maybe need to engage and try and discuss some more and other more constructive ways of engaging in relation to that. In addition to that, if you look in the CCMA's budget allocation, we have interpreters and we have on our books permanently of all the official languages, interpreters available, and that if you request an interpreter in additional language, depending on the circumstances of it, we would obviously try and pay for that because it needs to be neutral in that context. So that's basically what our approach to that would be. But I think that we would be more than happy to engage you further on that and see if we can try and even extend that further, because we do try and stipulate not only in relation to sign language, but also for, you know, for blind people or partially sighted people, we have proper access to the buildings and things that deal with issues in relation to that. I think that probably covers in brief the questions that you raised. To Honourable Madisha. You raised a whole series of questions that I'm going to try and answer some of them as quickly as I can, and also some of them I'm going to answer by looking back at the presentation where maybe I didn't unpack it because I was trying to be a bit speedy in some of the issues. I think the answer is it the CCMA's role to save jobs or create jobs for that matter, in society? And I mean, I would argue the answer to that is no. But obviously, it is certainly our role to try and ensure that we minimize retrenchments. I think the other thing is that if you talk to the economists who work in our economy, and one of the things that they've emphasized with me is very specifically the principle that it's much easier to save a job and create a new job. So we see that as an important role the CCMA can play in this time of economic crises. And it's quite interesting to note that at this time that, you're often seeing employers, even as far as the shop is closed, coming to the CCMA for assistance to try and work out ways that they can try and, you know, extend their budgets to make things work better. Whereas normally you might see labour coming to us in times of economic boom, you don't see that as much at the moment. You actually see employers asking for assistance more, which is quite an interesting experience for us because it's normally the other way around. So we do need to look at the issues. We do need to look at the job loss. We do need to look at what's happening in relation to that. But you almost also remember, and we haven't touched on that yet, and maybe we need to spend another session briefing the committee because we're going to touch on some of the other questions that were asked later on. But the CCMA has an area of jurisdiction of work that it deals with, and that they're also bargaining councils for various sectors who deal with work. And the CCMA credits those bargaining councils, but they would also be in a position to deal with job-saving issues in relation to that and certain facilitations. But not all of them are able to do it, but some do. And there's a whole lot of work that's happening in there. For example, in manufacturing, the mental industry and Iron Bargaining Council are actually dealing with a lot of job losses in that area, but those cases are not coming necessarily to the CCMA in relation to that. So we need to look at how we work on that and maybe give you more of a picture on the work in relation to that. You asked me the question in relation to targets. Let me go back to to what I was showing you and it's just it's easiest to look at it here. So it also starts answering your two questions. Okay, if you see goal two on the slide that I'm showing you up here, we did set targets, okay, and that's the second column here. So you see on this slide 2.3, and it says by 2010 as a measure at the top, and then targets 2010. So those are the targets we're trying to work towards. And then between every year for 3 years, we set sort of interim targets in relation to that. And that's why you can see the green or the amber or the red light, or green, orange, or red light, which is saying, yes, we've met the target that we set. No, we haven't met the target that we met. So that's where the issues are in relation to that. And we are trying to deal with work in relation to that. I think that historically, in relation to time frames, the CCMA has been significantly criticized. And it put a lot of work into trying to improve the time frames and turnaround times of the CCMA. And, I mean, obviously, this slide actually starts addressing it. If you look at the slide, we try to show you in the slide, it is up to 2007-08 in the annual report I handed you out, and this is the gem in 2008-09 to mid-year, which is to September last year. It shows you that basically how we've tried to, by percentage-wise, improve times and turnaround times in the CCMA. And maybe the best way to look at it is to look at maybe time 11 and 12, the bottom two, whereas what we had is turnaround times for conciliation in 2005 and 6, it took 45 days to get your conciliation heard, which was well 15 days after the legal requirement, so therefore a complete violation of the law. And it's in 2008 and 9, it actually took 28 days, so a huge improvement, okay, 17-day improvement over that period of time. Again, for arbitrations, in 2005 and 6, you will see that it took 79 days for an arbitration to be heard. Over the period of time, it's now reduced down to 41 days. So while, yes, you will hear the argument that this case has gone on for a long time and that case has gone on for a long time, we've done a study in relation to that, and it shows us about 5 to 10% of cases only, bearing in mind of our 140,000 cases that are coming in, that really actually take an extra amount of time. And usually the reason for that is that there are lots of witnesses, multiple legal representation, and quite a complex reason for the dismissal that arises out of that. But normally if you have a matter where maybe you have a trade union official and an employer there, and they're representing the dismissal of an individual worker, or three or four, the turnaround time is within those time frames. But yes, also, as other members have mentioned, that in some provinces it's more efficient than in others. But we are working towards it, and we try and constantly maintain that, and we want to work and improve that on an ongoing basis. You asked me the question about labour courts, and yes, to some degree I didn't answer the question. I need to flag that I'm a lawyer by training, and so essentially the labour court has oversight of me, like you have oversight of the CCMA. So to stand before this committee and maybe be a little bit critical of the Labour Court is a little bit inappropriate of me, but is there a concern by the management of the CCMA and the governing body of the CCMA about turnaround times and the delivery in the Labour Court? I'm going to answer you and say yes. And we are concerned that there needs to be some attention paid, bearing in mind, though, that that's a court that falls under the Department of Justice. And it's not under the Department of Labour.
Having said that, we have worked very strongly with the Department of Labor and other social partners on our board to try and set meetings up, to try and have discussions with the Labor Court, and we've recently got some funding for various sorts of things to do to try and improve some of the operations of the Labor Court, which we actively as the CCMA are driving. For example, statistics that we put up here are based on a very, very fancy thing which we have, which is the case management system. The Labor Court doesn't have that system, so they actually can't tell you where their cases are, how long they are, what the turnaround times are, or anything like that. We're trying to do a project where we can assist them to utilize our system. It will also make it much easier to track where your case is if you're an individual worker, and a whole lot of issues that go with that. In addition to that, there's also been an initiative through the Labor Market Chamber at MEDLAC, where there has been the Rules Committee of the Labor Court convened quite recently to try and look at some of the rules of the Labor Court, because that's also where I would argue that the blocking of individual worker rights probably occurs. And let me just take you through this so you understand. The CCMA, let's say in those 41 days, gives you an arbitration award, but the employer ignores it. You then go to the Labor Court and you try and have it made an order of court. There's a long process and the CCMA is involved in part of that. And then having from that the employer who didn't attend the arbitration suddenly decides to review you, but only in the Labor Court. Then that takes anything from 6 months to 2 years to be heard. Now the Labor Court doesn't have any time limit in which to set that matter down, and there's no way of tracking whether the matter has been set down or not. So if you are a wealthy employer, let's say, and you're an employee who's maybe not represented by a very well-organized trade union, or you don't have a trade union at all, you would not know how to pursue your rights in relation to the Labor Court. So the matter could easily be stopped just due to the ignorance of the individual worker there. And the CCMA is with limited resources, and it's also seen as, in law, a thing which is, you would say, sunk in the sector, which means that we've finished our function there, and we're not allowed to intervene anymore. But we obviously have a service where we tell the workers who come to CCMA what to do. But the Labor Court doesn't have a sort of reciprocal service where there's assistance in relation to that. So we need to do some work with the Labor Court. I think they're sort of identifying that as a problem, and we do certainly need to speed up that, because how effectively I can sit here and say to you, we are doing this and this and this and this, and we certainly are. There are delays being incurred, and there is a problem in relation to that. So please could you understand that I'm saying this with respect to the Labor Court and with the other departments, so I hope you understand that it's not really appropriate as a director of the CCMA to say, but I'm trying to make sure that as an oversight body you also understand the concerns that we have in relation to that issue. And again, let's say now you get your arbitration award and the Labor Court does make it an order of court, and the other issue that the Honourable Madisha asked me, which was in relation to the sheriff. If you're a dismissed worker, sheriffs operate from the court in an entirely separate business. It's not even like part of the Department of Justice. So what you have to do is you have to pay a deposit of money to get the sheriff to go out and execute it. So let's say they're going to catch the car of the employer and sell that car. You can't get the sheriff to do it unless you pay them a deposit to cover their insurance in case it's the wrong car. Now, if you're a dismissed worker and you've been dismissed and you've already been out of job for 6 months, you don't have R1,000 or whatever it might take to go and pay that deposit to the sheriff, so it becomes highly problematic. Those are areas that I think are being looked at and have been raised by the governing body of the CCMA, and I know through the Department of Labor they're actively looking at solutions and options around there. But I would suggest that perhaps as this committee, some suggestions on that would also probably be helpful to give ideas on how that could be assisted and helped in relation to work for that, because yes, an injustice is done in relation to that process. It isn't fair that the workers go through that whole process. And it's quite an overwhelming process it takes a long time for legally trained people. So if you just come off an assembly line working, it's quite hard and tricky to deal with issues in relation to that. The issue in relation to the delays in arbitration awards, also again, I showed you the operational efficiencies list there. I completely concede that there has historically been a long period of time where there was delays in arbitration awards, but if you look at line 9 on that list, then it is also in the annual report. There has been over the last 3-4 years a very, very active attempt to clean up and make sure we don't have delays in relation to arbitration awards. I'm not saying it's perfect yet. There is a 1% level of cases that do come out after 14 days, but we're hopeful, and I'm hopeful that when we sit here this time next year, that we will be able to say that we've actually cleaned that part up as well. There is circumstances where I, as the director, am permitted in terms of the law to give an extension to a commissioner
For example, commissioners are also people. They also get sick. They also have deaths in the family. And so I have to give that into consideration when I'm obviously considering as a director to give them an extension for that. We are working very hard at it, and we're trying to make sure the commissioners comply with that process. We have quite a strict disciplinary process for commissioners if they don't comply with that process. You indicated to me that you would, in relation to your corruption issue, you would talk to us offline, and I'd be very grateful if you would. One of my approaches on that is that we all have an obligation to ensure that the organization operates properly, and if anybody's got anything of that, we, as the management team here, we take a very strong attitude to that, and we investigate every single complaint that comes to us. We have a fraud hotline, and we try and make sure that we take action against people who do that, because firstly, I see the state money. Secondly, it's my obligation as the accounting authority, together with the CFO, we have to account both to the legislature and to the treasury for the money that we're given. And if anybody does anything inappropriate, I don't think it's acceptable. I think I have covered all the questions that you asked and that I've left coming out. You can flag me. Honourable, you raised a whole lot of issues, and you indicated to me that you've been involved in the CCMA in Johannesburg. And yes, I think historically it has been probably a province that's had quite a few problems, but I think it's really significantly improving, and we're very proud of that in relation to the work that. I think you also asked me to unpack the issue of the 70% of cases settled at conciliation. Let me start by saying that when we set that goal, which is here, we didn't have the case that you're referring to. Right, okay, which is, okay, because the key thing is that we set that goal is because we want to be seen as firstly a conciliatory and mediation body, and then lastly a court of law arbitration body, because our principles are social justice is everybody finding an agreement where you find each other and you have a reconciliation. So that is the motivation behind that. And in addition to that, it's obviously on a cost-effective level, if you're running a cycle, if you're looking at it as a business, it's far more cost-effective for us to settle cases at conciliation than it is at arbitration. Bearing in mind, though, that when we settled that statistic and that goal, the case that has come out of the Labour Appeal Court was not then the case. And the interpretation of the law by all the social partners was not that. So that's also why I studied it in this conjunction now. We are going to be in the beginning, and towards the end of this year, reviewing the strategy, and we'll obviously have to look at it in context of that. But there was a case, and the Honourable Member is quite correct, and it does make, to some extent, make that target quite problematic in relation to that. And certainly we wouldn't force somebody, and we wouldn't count it against them, and we'd try and settle it at arbitration, and we would say, look, it is conciliated, but we would push it forward to the arbitration process, and we certainly wouldn't prevent somebody in relation to that. You talked to me a little bit about commissions being full-time and part-time, and then you mentioned the issue of Tequiso. Let me just explain to you very carefully. The CCMA don't have any outsourcing contract with Tequiso at all. Okay. I think it's what's probably concerning you and confusing you, and it's the easiest way to explain it, is Tequiso is a private dispute resolution agency, and they operate privately, and they charge for dispute resolution function, which the CCMA doesn't do. Obviously, we are serviced for free. But you can certainly, as a trade union, an employer write into your collective agreement that you would go to Tequiso, then you're waiving your rights to come to CCMA, then you have to pay. Secondly, the thing that Tequiso has done is that they have contracted with various bargaining councils through a private contract to run their dispute resolution. So, for example, in the Metal Industry Bargaining Council, in the Motor Industry Bargaining Council, in the Road Freight, there's a whole lot of councils, they actually run their dispute resolution service as a private function for them, and the social partners in that bargaining council pay Tequiso for that. But the CCMA, other than having a collegial relationship with Tequiso, has no other formal relationship. One of our key things is to try and have to be collegial and cooperative with each other. But we don't have any formal relationship, and we certainly wouldn't agree to outsourcing any of our work. In fact, there's a bit of resistance, and people are frustrated with us for that, because we believe that it's our obligation in terms of the law, as I showed you, our functions, to maintain our own statistical data and put out our own statistical information in relation to that. But I certainly understand how the perception has arisen in relation to that. And so we would agree that outsourcing of that function would be inappropriate. Okay. I think I'd like to say thank you to Honourable Chaka for representing me so nicely to Honourable Madisha in relation to reading that in your report. And I'm teasing, it's okay. But you did ask about the specific sectors that we've had jobs saved in. I'm going to look at some of our mediation commissioners and check with them.
I would argue that it's in mining, okay, and manufacturing and retail. Mining and manufacturing sectors mainly. That the job saving has been, okay. I just wanted to check before I said it off the top of my head, because sometimes I can't remember everything. Okay, thank you. Chair, thank you very much.
Thanks. I think this is it. We do agree that the CCMA is doing an excellent job. I think we all concur there. Slight issue that needs to be raised there. Colleagues. You see, when we have parliament, the reason is that there's perpetual evolution of life out there. You have indicated, and you are right, that employers are becoming much cleverer. And as a sequence of that, at the same time, you'll find that those poor workers there are faced with a serious problem. So we have come up, well, Parliament has done that, with a particular piece of legislation which are being thwarted really by the employers. Now you have Parliament, which has got to say, given what these colleagues are saying, can there be amendments to those pieces of legislation so that the nation, the people out there, can be protected. I think we need to understand that. And from what they then are saying, and I think you're right, as a lawyer, you will understand, and some of us do have that little bit of background. What you then are saying is that there is this kind of a problem. And our colleagues here, or what the department has got to do, when we go back there, and we must be able to argue and say, how do we save these poor people in the country? Because, like I'm saying, the ordinary people in ourselves here are faced with this momentous challenges of saving people, because, of course, you are right, that which you are doing cannot override that which the courts are doing out there. But can we find a way, really? I think that is what we are saying. You are throwing this to us to say we are faced with this problem. Okay? Now what we need to sit and do and say is that now you see, this is what CCMA is saying. They can't save all the people, if they have this particular target, etc. Now what do we do to circumvent this thing? I think that is why you have parliament and the perpetual evolution of the amendments of acts, etc. So I just wanted to clarify this. However, I think, our colleagues here say, you are doing an excellent job.
Thank you, Honorable Matista.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I would not have much. Only to say that it will be necessary for us to get that breakdown. I know it's going to be more of that, but we'll use this as an example in our engagement with our constituencies and in our engagement with the executive, because it will be necessary to give us that particular breakdown. But that experience, I think, is the one strong thing that you may want to share with us at some point, is how you manage, in fact, to arrive at that point where even you are plotted, I mean, by ourselves here. I think it's very critical, it's necessary. Chair, for now, what we expect is that it's to encourage you. We are faced with a very dark cloud that is coming in our way, and it's just to encourage you to keep on hammering and fostering this relationship and saving thousands more jobs. This is only what I can say now, and I think that the input made from our side is to appreciate the wonderful work that you do. But this tendency of yourself
saying that we don't want to jump, you know, the gun before we meet the executive on our challenges. It does not help. In fact, you must have a way in which you are able to table your issues. There's no other protocol. When you're in Parliament, we can call on you, we can summon you to give us that report, even if you've commissioned a particular study, you know, around your challenges. But I think let's begin to establish that particular relationship where we can be able to work together and on your behalf, in fact, raise those issues with the executive. It may take the executive another 3 years to address the issues. It may take Parliament 2 weeks or a day to resolve those issues. I think we need to look at those relations. But all in all, I think we are quite very... And we have learned a lot. In fact, for the first time, I come to this committee. But I think I've learned a lot today. More than even the commitment issues has been in the field for many years, but it seems you're still lagging behind a number of challenges. And progress that has been made in the past 3 years, I think it's a lot. But I think we are learning, and we learn a lot from him too, you know, as a colleague, to help us go through some of the challenges that we have. So thank you.
Just final point from Misha. The statistics of the jobs that have been saved. I know that you were talking to CMA, but if possible, I know it may not necessarily be your competency to get information from other bargaining councils. But if you can find a way, because if you can find a way of getting those, I think that would be important. Lastly, sir, is that I've seen also in the presentation that you are looking at reducing arbitration hours that have been referred to the labor court. And it's not easy. Because lawyers, they make money. They're in business. So I think then in trying to minimize arbitration hours that are reviewed is a way of... I think in doing that, if I understand you correctly, is that you through capacity building, training of commissioners, you want a situation where even if an arbitration award has been taken for review, you know that everything from the conduct and the approach of the commissioner himself or herself when he or she was presiding on a particular case, nothing will be found wrong on the part of the commissioner. I think you mean that by reducing that this two more cases that was handled. Poor commissioner was saying to himself, what is it that is wrong that I've done, labor court, Supreme Court of Appeal, all those appointed to the Constitutional Court, and then the Constitutional Court said the commissioner was right. Thank you.
For me, too, for the last one, I'm gone then.
I just hope you're going to ask a question.
Yeah, no. It's a point that I want to raise. There's some agreement between Honorable Matisse and the CMA about the corruption case. and I think that was raised in the portfolio committee. It was not raised outside the portfolio. It will be necessary for either how you have resolved it, if you cannot raise it, so that we get a report as this committee, so how we have dealt with that. If Congressman Pisa cannot raise it openly, it means either the issue is so big, but it means that it must come to the committee. We want to know how we have resolved that issue that he has raised.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember Ms. Khan answering that question. They need further details from Honorable Madisha. So at this stage, until the details have been finished, then they will follow the case. Thank you.
That doesn't mean it's private, or Honorable Madika, would you raise it open? It's something that is not subject. If it's corruption, it's corruption, then it must come forward. Or unless otherwise there's something which I don't know.
Okay.
Because normally, you know, when you give a piece of this message, so they're hiding corruption. If I'm certain about what I know, then I'll definitely say that at this office, there's a particular commissioner, either the name of his or whatever. I think that's how we should handle it. Because, you see, this year says in one chair, we have to fight corruption at all levels. And that's why I'm saying that it must not be dealt with private. It must come out. We must know about it. Because there may be many more of them. But this is what I'm saying, that supporting what the chair is saying, but it's up to Honorable Madisha maybe to us, to give us, it depends on what they're saying. But the fact that if there's corruption, we're not going to sit back. We have to get the facts, and this committee must resolve that. We'll want a report, you know, on that particular element of corruption.
Miss, do you want to? I think
that I could probably assist Chair. I should make it easier, Chair, in order with you and Madisha. I completely agree that cases of corruption must be made public and reported, but bearing in mind that they remain, and we in the principles of fair labor practices. So I know that the Honourable Madisha has come from that environment, so he knows the principles of that. So you would report it first and investigate it, and then publicize it once the investigation shows the issues in relation to that. So I would subscribe to those are the principles that I have to uphold as a director. So that's why I assumed it was appropriate to say, can we talk about it? And I've got no problem in giving a report back to the committee on what we did to investigate it. But you would want to protect the person. Let's say somebody says something to the Honourable Madisha that isn't correct. It would be very unfair in a public forum to have that person's name named. Okay. So that would be the argument that I would raise in what I have to uphold as a director of the CTMA in fair labour practice principles. And I would like to be seen to applying that to the staff of the CTMA as well, if that's in order with the manager.
I think
if
she would allow me.
Oh, please.
Because I believe in that. Okay. That is why after having received the report, if you days ago, I didn't run, okay, and even stopped the person from, as he was attempting to do, went to the media and so on. He said, no, you don't do that. Let there be a proper route to be followed. And can we, given the fact that we are going to meet, report it? And in doing that, one did not go via the back door to say, CDMA, there is this kind of thing. It is something that has got to be dealt with here. And that's exactly, I'm going to you and say to the person, here is the leadership of CDMA, go and meet with them in front of you. That's exactly what you're doing. Not to go out and say, hallelujah, there is this kind of thing. So I'm going to them, Chair, at the end of this meeting, give them all the details, make sure that the person speaks to them, and make sure that the person moves from Alberton, comes and talks to you, and that's it. That's exactly what you're saying, Chair.
I'm going to stop you, Honourable Chair, if you're going to go out of order.
The point was that if we wanted to report, she would make the report available. I'm saying the decision of the committee that we want to get a report of the outcome of whatever investigation.
Okay, thank you very much for
taking
that. I'll give
it a report. Yes. Okay, I know that. Yeah, we had what you're saying. I think from my side, as Chair, I'm also interested. I'm sure that the CMA will also follow Honorable Madisha, not wait for Honorable Madisha, because when you come back, we would want to get the report as to what has transpired and where are you with the case, because really it's important. We must be seen fighting corruption where it's suffering. Any more questions? I am not going to ask any question.
Though I don't understand the slides, but I'm sure when you come back for your annual report, I will understand them. I don't understand the numbers. I'm sure you have answers for them. Definitely, you can't put numbers that you can't talk to them. So for today, I think we are very happy with the presentation. But there's a room for more improvement. Members have raised a number of things that I think you will follow them. We'll engage more when we see you again. And thank you for the good work. I know that no employer wants to talk about CCMA. I mean, a person has to stand on his feet. You know, you are really a threat to employers. So that means something, because if you were not a threat, when somebody says they're going to go, we'll be there. So thank you once more.
Complies with the requirements set out in Schedule 4 of this bill. If one looks at the vision, and this is not just the vision that we have embraced as productivity SA all over the world, institutions that are driving productivity, they focus on aspects such as productivity and competitiveness, and we are looking at our vision as doing something like that. And in terms of what forms the core of what we do, through the different programs that we have, which I will talk about in the next coming few slides, we look at continuous productivity improvement of all South Africans. When we started, as I said, that our focus was on big sectors and big organizations. But if you look at what's happening throughout the world, for a nation to become productive, you have to bring every single sector of the economy along with you. So it can't just be something that's just exclusive to big organizations. Every single South African has to be part and parcel of the productivity program and drive. Our key focus areas for 2009, which we have carried for a couple of years now, and we continue with it as well in this current financial year, focuses on productivity promotion campaigns for South Africans. And I think if you look at countries such as Japan, Singapore, they have really excelled in terms of making sure that the nation rallies and understands the importance of productivity, and this is going to be one of our focus areas. We're going to be looking at productivity in industry. It's very important and very key that we focus on that. But we feel that productivity is also very key in the public sector, and I think there's been a big outcry about service delivery. How do we work with governments? How do we work with municipalities? How do we work with schools and education to make sure that they understand and embrace the importance of productivity? Because we believe it is at the center of service delivery. So we have to pay special attention for the public sector. But we cannot also leave enterprises alone. And I think since this morning there's been a lot of talk around what we do about the crisis that we're seeing in companies that are sharing jobs. And we've got programs which Mr. Mkhize from NERDLAC spoke about, Social Plan, which started at NERDLAC. We are the implementing agency of that, and we will talk about what we do and how we go about implementing Social Plan. Another program which we project manage on behalf of DTI, which is the Workplace Challenge, focuses more on enterprises that are wanting to be competitive and want to compete with any company anywhere in the world. But also SMEs are very important and very critical in making sure that we bring them along as we build the productivity of South Africa. Corporate services is important, looking at productivity internally. How do we structure ourselves in such a way that we're able to deliver on all of these aspects that I spoke about in terms of human resource, in terms of structuring ourselves, in how we conduct ourselves in terms of the finances that have been allocated. The strategic objectives that drive productivity SA, some of them are very key, and we continue to do these things. And if you look at, which I've already started talking to, promotion of the cultural productivity in the workplaces is very important through the various programs that we have, which you will see, and we will talk about those. The development of relevant productivity competencies. One of the challenges, and it comes through again on our productivity statistics on the World Competitiveness Report, is that productivity competencies in the country is very low, but we need to up it up a little bit. How do we train people? How do we orientate people to the level where they can be able to talk and deal and measure productivity, even if productivity is not involved directly? We facilitate and evaluate productivity improvement and competitiveness in the workplaces. To measure and evaluate productivity in the workplaces, maintain a database of productivity and competitiveness systems and publishing these systems, and undertaking productivity-related research was very strong. It's one of our key competencies as well in terms of productivity research. We have annual productivity statistics. We participate in IMD reports. So these are some of the strong components that we have within Productivity SA. And we support initiatives that are aimed at preventing job losses. So we look for those and we partner with people. We try and put turnaround programs for initiatives that would help prevent job losses. And any other related functions that have anything to do with productivity improvement in the country. So this I have already spoken about. Let's have a look at one of the key programs that we're going to be looking at and have been doing this for some time. Productivity SA is 40 years old this year. The deliberate awareness program started about 20 years ago. We've, over the years, been putting together some measures to try and create awareness in companies, whether we do it through the media or whether we do it through the various focus periods like October every year. It's National Productivity Month, and this is where we really talk about the challenges of productivity and try and channel the attention of all South Africans to the importance and the need to increase and embrace productivity in the country. And the objective really around this particular process is to look at championing productivity nationally. And I think the challenge that we have in terms of creating that national productivity awareness movement is that how do you make sure that it goes to all the provinces? We tended to focus on the three provinces, Gauteng, Cape Town, and Durban, and this is where our offices are. But there's a need to go to the rural areas. We do some work in those places, but we find ourselves being challenged in terms of reach. So we need to increase that awareness in those areas. So we will make sure that programs such as Social Plan and Workplace Challenge receives awareness in terms of what it can do for companies. Some companies that are in distress don't actually know where to go or where to begin. Even if they want to put a turnaround program in place, where do they go and how do they get in touch with us? Will be a big focus for us this year. And various productivity-related information, which is generated either through research reports that are coming through, various programs that we do or partnerships that we create, we will be focusing on all of these. If you look at productivity in industry, which looks really at providing decision makers in government, in business and labor with information and knowledge on productivity of economic sectors to improve competitiveness of our economy. This we do really through generation of information. Whether it's through research, working with a network of researchers, distilling lessons learned and the best practices from successful cases inside and outside the country. We have set a couple of targets for ourselves in this financial year. We have outlined these in terms of making sure that we will continue to make sure that we produce the productivity statistics, and these we use to impose strategies for interventions. When we go to the different sectors of our economy, how do we, what sort of programs do we put in place to make sure that those interventions talk to the information that's available. We will be looking at in-depth research reports supporting sector development strategies. There will be seminars and workshops that will be conducted to make sure that we disseminate information that has been generated by that. And I think since this morning, as we've been talking about making sure that we support the sectors that are in distress or organizations that are in distress, this is where the process begins. We need to have an understanding of where the challenges are, which sectors are bleeding, and how do we put tailored strategies for those sectors that have been identified through this particular process. The other program looks at the productivity in the public sector. One of the things that we identified some years ago was that if we are to make sure that we reach, I said earlier that we only have offices in Durban, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. But if we are to reach, for instance, Limpopo, or if we are to reach Mpumalanga, we need to make sure that we create networks of people that are, that have the competencies that are requisite to making sure that productivity is spread around the different areas. Educators, for instance, are one of the avenues that we've identified, and we have started the process of making sure that we work with education departments and educate and train educators to train learners on productivity concepts. That process has started some years ago. We will continue with it because we feel it has legs to make sure that we spread the message of productivity. We have a very wonderful program with, for instance, Limpopo government in terms of this particular program, where we were even called in to just come in and provide support. We have worked with the church facilitators or skills development facilitators. They have decided to run and introduce that productivity concept themselves, and we have called in just to provide backup and support. So these are the sort of things that we want to make sure that we do when we work with government departments to make sure that the spread and the understanding of productivity not just sits within Productivity SA, which is in KZN or Devon or Western Cape, but it goes to the different other programs. Mr. Gogo will talk about the productivity in enterprises.
Thank you, Mr. Fateke. In terms of productivity in enterprises, we have three different types of enterprises. Firstly, enterprises that are in distress, which run a risk of losing jobs. And then we also have stable enterprises that we are trying to help to improve on their productivity and competitiveness. And we also assist emerging enterprise. And in terms of enterprises that are in distress, as was earlier alluded to by my colleague from NEDLEC, that we have a turnaround solution of the social plan, which arose as a result of the presidential job summit in 1998, but within productivity say it only commenced in the year 2000. So when the job summit was looking at interventions that were aimed at ameliorating the job losses, they mandated productivity say to look at the issue of job losses. So on an annual basis, we set targets that are aimed at minimizing the job losses. And as indicated that the target in terms of the funds allocation for the current financial year, we are looking at establishing 120 future forums. The reason why we start off with future forum, we believe that a sustainable productivity improvement can only happen in an environment where there is collaboration between management and labor. So before we can even start with our initiatives, we ensure that there is a buy-in from labor. So we are aiming at implementing 70 turnaround strategies, and then we are also aiming at putting early warning system. When we move away from the company, we want the company not to come back to productivity and ask for help, but we help them establish early warning system where they can see when things are going wrong and be able to rectify that. And what we've also found is that this solution is reactive in that it's looking only at companies once they are in distress. But what we also are aiming at doing is to target 137 companies that are stable and help them with early warning systems so that they shouldn't even get to a point where they are in distress. And then we'll be conducting 50 impact assessments where we'll be trying to evaluate the impact of our interventions. We'll conduct 12 industry desktop studies. As indicated earlier on by my colleague from NEDLAC, we will be working with NEDLAC in terms of working in the distress sectors and identifying what the challenges are and what can be done jointly in order to address those challenges. And what we'll also be doing is to look at those companies that we have done interventions in, and a minimum of 110 we will be able to put productivity changes. The targets that we have set in the first slide are constrained by the amount of fund allocation, but what we have also done is to identify partners within the public as well as the private sector that will help us make a bigger impact, because for us to meaningfully respond to the global, to the economic meltdown that we are currently experiencing, we need more role players and we need to make a bigger impact. And the next program that we are working on, which is also an initiative of NEDLAC, is referred to as Workplace Challenge. The role of this program is to foster collaboration between management and labor aimed at improving productivity and competitiveness. And what we have also established in these companies is that companies that are competitive are able to not only increase their profitability, but to attract more employment. So it's another way of doing job creation. So in terms of the target set, we have targeted to 110 companies. We will also be helping with the capacity building. We'll be implementing a workplace transformation in about 9 clusters. What we do, we tend to put the companies together so that they can learn from each other and be able to make about improvements. And then we'll be having 7 clusters participating in the aftercare program. The aftercare program is that once we have done the implementation, we don't walk away, but we want to see the continuous improvement taking place in those companies. And then we will also be looking at model companies. One way of promoting productivity improvement is to get model companies and showcase what they are doing so that other companies can also be able to learn and improve on their productivity. And then we'll also be establishing 4 manufacturing sectors where there will be continuous improvement. Manufacturing is one of the key sectors that Department of Trade and Industry have identified that we should focus on. And then we will also implement awareness and dissemination program, where we will be putting together all the successes of the program and disseminating them to potential people who will participate in the program. And then the third aspect of this area is productivity in SME. Our goal is to help companies that are in the second economy to be in transition to the first economy through productivity improvement, and not only to be on the survival mode, because study has shown that most of the SMEs last an average of about 2 years. So by helping them have systems in place that can sustain productivity improvement, these companies are not only able to survive, but they are able to grow into the first economy and also be able to attract more jobs. And then in terms of corporate services, which covers both human resource as well as finances, under human resources, I'll only cover the key aspect, which is skill transfer. What we have been able to do as a productivity essay, we've been able to strike a partnership with our Asian counterparts, which has been going on for 3 years. This will be the 4th year. And the whole idea is to transfer skills that are productivity related. The first one is Asian Productivity Organization. the second one being Japanese Center for Social Economic Development. And what's also relevant in terms of partnerships is that we have an organization known as Pan Africanist Productivity Association, which is an association of productivity associations within Africa that come together and share techniques and skills that are productivity related. And it also helps those countries that have not established productivity organizations to take off. And with this organization was started a couple of years ago, but we resuscitated it in year 2002. And since its inception, Productivity SA South Africa has been the secretariat. And what we've also been able to do in terms of productivity improvement, we have been invited in AU Labor and Social Affairs Commission, where we've been able to present papers on productivity improvement and encourage other countries that have not embraced productivity to subscribe to productivity accord. And then in terms of governance, which is the last aspect, one would like to indicate that we are compliant with the TFMA. We implement risk management strategy not only at the finance level, but at program level. We implement fraud prevention plans as prescribed by TFMA, and we also plan on a three-year cycle. We submit annual budget annually to Treasury, and we are fully compliant with the Public Finance Management Act. Then the next aspect looks at the funding that comes from this house, the portfolio committee. So when one looks at it, one would notice that there has been an average of 5% increase in the allocated funding, and that for the current financial year, the amount of money that has been allocated is about 29.5. And when you look at the next slide, one notices that in terms of trying to make an impact in the economy, we do not limit ourselves to the funding that we get from Parliament, but we have been working on partnerships, particularly within the government, that can help us to be able to deliver on our mandate. So currently the biggest chunk of our funding is government grant, and the second aspect is social plan, although currently the social plan is that amount of money. But we believe that in order for us to make a bigger impact, we should get into more partnerships. Recently, we started talks with the IDC in order to be able to make a bigger impact. And as earlier on was indicated, we are working with NEDLAC, we are working with SMA. And in terms of private partnerships to augment the work that we are doing on social plan, we have already entered into an agreement with one of the big four banks, and we are approaching the second one. And the key being not to be constrained by the amount of funding that we are having and make a bigger impact in the economy. Yeah, that concludes the presentation, and we would welcome the questions relating to our presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm looking at the slides and listening to the presentation. The presentation reflects positive work that you have done, but there are no figures attached. That makes it difficult for me now to say really the mandate that you were given as a result of the Job Summit in 1998, how much work have you done within that mandate? The second area, Chair, is that it looks like, even if you have been called in to intervene, to assist, you do not necessarily have powers to combat those companies that were called in to assist to implement what you think and you have worked around as positive solutions to the problems that those companies have. I'm saying this because I know I was in factory work, I was an operator, CNC operator. You will find a situation where your institution is called in to assist on productivity that will do what is called cycle time. And you will set targets and then say these are the targets that you can do in relation to the equipment that is used. More and above can be something that can bring you centers, but then you leave it there at that. So I think the fine thing, most of the advices that you give, it looks like to me, you do not have authority to say, this is what has to be done in order for the realization of the productivity. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. 40 years of existence, 15 years of being in the democratic South Africa, you only exist in three provinces. When was this bill passed? Over 40 years ago. But why this province? Why you saying you want to expand? But I don't hear the plan of expanding. How are you going to expand to other provinces? And how are you going to exist in those provinces? Are you going to open up offices, store, which areas that you have targeted? I come from a province called the Northern Province. The economic activities there, the mines, and as you know. And the main town there is Rustenburg, the flags of town. And that's where the key of the province is. But it's not there. My concern is what point? It's about time to change, but at this point in time, especially on top of this crisis that we're facing, this is how we want to cover the country. I hear you talking of the social plan, the not like social plan. One of the things I was trying to get from Nadleg itself was to get that program plan and have a feel of it. It's clear that it's not come out. Maybe with yourself, your intervention within that social plan, at what level are you sort of intervening? For me, those would be my first small questions that I have. For the first time, we interact with yourself. We understand that we may not have the full scale. But at some point, I think with your annual report, I think we'll be able to look at your targets, what you have set up for achievement and all that, and start to gauge you based on what you have said you're going to achieve maybe in the next round. So I think that is my first two questions. Come back again.
You have referred to the job study 1998. I think your shortcoming, and I trust you must deliver, is the fact that you have not interacted with what was produced by that job summit in 1998. I've not heard you, but I mean, I know for sure, because I've been the chairperson of that particular committee since 2000 up to today. And you have never come together to work with the particular committee. Because had you done that, you could have gone into all the provinces, because it has gone into all provinces, creating 36,000 jobs. So I think that is one of your weaknesses. You have not moved and dealt with the cooperatives, with the, he cites the issue of Northwest, their mines there, etc., to actually go in and look into what should be looked into, etc. So that's one thing, and I think you need to look into that. So instead of me raising questions, I think one can just, only advise, because there are weaknesses here. And just to say that the Labour Job Creation Trust, which came as a result of that summit of 1998 convened by President Mandela, is there, okay, with 120 million rand, and you have not tapped into that. And like I'm saying, I'm chairperson of that, is going to, is entering this thing in all the provinces. You were supposed to have done that, you haven't. I think that's one thing that you need to do. Now the other issue is the Proudly South African campaign. Okay, I don't hear you saying this is what we've been able to do with the Proudly South African campaign, right? I'm not going to say respond here, because again, we can only advise, and perhaps we need to hear from you next when we meet to say, insofar as the Proudly South African campaign is concerned, this is what we are doing, this is what we have done to make sure that there is production of the resources in the country, the people in South Africa concentrate on this, rather than, having a situation where you basically have resources from outside of South Africa and creating a problem of removing the jobs from our people in the country. I think those are some of the things that you need to look into. So that, like I'm saying, when we come next to talk to the committee, you are able to say, this is what you've done. But apart from that, again, through your chair, we'll remain available at any time for you to interact with us to say, where are we failing? What is it that we've got to do? And with this interaction that we have with various committees out there, we then can be able to say, this is what you need to do. But I'm saying, I think there is work that needs to be done today. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. The social plan from NEDLAC, you say that Productivity SA are the implementers of the social plan. Can you share with us in percentage the number of jobs that you have actually saved using the social plan, and in relation to the global meltdown, and also advise us, as the honorable member here has said, that in 40 years of existence and 15 years in democracy, we still can't even see you in the small corners of our provinces and in our constituencies. Can you give us time frame to say that by this time we would have had operational offices at least central in each of the six provinces that you are not available in? And we want to actually even know the spheres or the areas in where you were able to implement the social plan, like let's say in the manufacturing industry, in the various industries where you were able to implement the social plan from NEDLAC. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Honorable Lusizo. Michelle Lucido. I might as well ask my question, saying
your time. You are also training government and SOEs. Now, in one of your slides, you have trained about managers, 100. I don't know if that 100 means that you have trained 100. But what I want to know is how many, just mention two to three SOEs that are known to have due to be in trouble. But just name three SOEs for me that you have assisted in this productivity. Also, you are, I'm hoping that in those, why I'm asking the question is because I'm hoping that in those SOEs you'll mention maybe Dinel and SAA. I don't know what criteria do you use to advise or to with the SOEs. You are going to establish or establish 800 early warning systems. Have these 100 been established or they are going to be established? Pardon me if you have explained that. Mm-hmm. 110 enterprises in Nechad. Any SOEs in those, how many of the SOEs? The motor companies, have they been established or they are to be established? If they have been established, are these new companies or you have transformed the companies that were not productive to be productive companies? Example, we are also training educators. Where do you see your, how do you measure yourself in particular in educators that you have trained? I'm under the impression that you are referring to teachers who are teaching learners at school and in tertiary. Now, how do you see your productivity in terms of output? Is it numbers of learners that have passed in that year or what? Are you seeing progress when it comes to educators in terms of this productivity?
That's that. I've got a follow-up.
Okay,
here in the same slide where you say productivity in public benefits organization, you say that here in your objectives you want to provide productivity training to educators and so on as it goes on. Then you say here your project for 2009-2010 is that educators train learners productivity concepts. You've got in brackets 460. I want to find out from you, if you say this 560 is the number of educators, are these educators going to be in proportionality to the number of schools that we have in the country? Or even the educators themselves, which means I don't know whether this will be a survey or it's a driver to say that you'll be taking maybe so many schools or so many educators, 560, I think it's too little, if this is actually the number of
educators that you want to train within your within the 2009-2010 financial year. And then you go on to say that you want to also train productivity training skills development facilitators, and you have in brackets 200. I don't know if this will be in proportion to the entire country. I mean, how can 200 people be facilitators to this country? Or are you still, maybe these objectives are only for the three provinces that you are concentrating in, which means that, in fact, the plans that you say that you have for this 2009-2010 to go to the other provinces will never be realized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of how many jobs we've been able to save, we were able to produce a report of our interventions for the 2007-2008, which indicates that we were able in 1 year to save 13,750. And what we learned earlier on from my colleague from CCMA, she indicated that it's much easier to save jobs than to create jobs. There's a study that indicated that it costs about 67,000 to create one job. And in our model, we are able to save jobs at the cost of 2,000. So it's much easier to save jobs than to create. And in terms of geographic spread, the report that we have here indicates that of the 100 interventions, 25 were in the Eastern Cape, 14 in Gauteng, 5 in Northwest, 5 in Limpopo, 2 in Mpumalanga, 24 in Western Cape, 13 in KwaZulu-Natal, no intervention in the Northern Cape, 12 in the Free State. Yes, I do admit that we need to improve on our geographic representation. But currently, we don't limit our interventions in the three provinces. For an instance, within social plan, we have four portfolio managers who we have allocated geographically in the current financial year. So they do go into those provinces and come up with interventions that will help in terms of saving jobs. But when one looks at the level of economic activity, it will always be likely that most of the interventions will be around provinces like Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. But we will always make an effort to reach even the smaller provinces as well. And then the next question was around our ability to compel the companies to participate in the interventions. Our process calls for application forms. Before we can come in and do an intervention in the company must first commit to participating in the social plan. And what we outline in that application form is that, among others, they are agreeing to the formation of the future forum, which comprises of management and labor. And that helps in terms of the buy-in, in terms of management and labor. It removes skepticism. And in that way, it ensures that both parties are committed to those implementations. So also in terms of our processes of ensuring that labor comes to the party, which we started about a year ago, is that we do capacity building of the future forum to ensure that both management and labor sing from the same page. And the other aspect that will help us to establish if what we have recommended has been implemented is the impact assessment. It will indicate that of the steps that have been recommended, so much has been implemented, and these are the results. And the third question, which is existence in three provinces, I have covered it in terms of saying that we allocate our managers within the mid-range region in terms of the provinces, and to ensure that we have provinces even in the rural areas. In terms of the constraints in terms of funding, it's not cost-effective to establish offices in all the provinces, but what we have done over and above the two provinces, because of our involvement and the level of activity in PE, we have a satellite office, and as we grow, we will also be looking at also establishing offices in other provinces. But for now, we are able to reach those provinces without necessarily being physically in those provinces. The other question that was raised was around, we referred to this NEDLAC social plan, and the question was, what interventions are we involved in? We have two types of intervention. One is company-level intervention, where we approach individual companies that are in distress and help them to turn around. And the other intervention is at sector level, where we identify sectors that are in distress. We do desktop studies to identify reasons for the job losses. We engage with the key stakeholders in terms of coming up with solutions on how they can deal with those challenges that are resulting in those job losses. And the manner in which we work in terms of engaging over and above the companies that are referred to, we also work with business chambers. We go to business chambers to make presentations. We also go to organized labor to make presentations. What makes it easy for us to reach both organized business and organized labor is that we are a tripartite organization. So in our board, we have members coming from organized business and organized labor. So they do help us in terms of reaching those two constituencies. There are two comments which were quite helpful, which came from the Honorable Member of Parliament, Mr. Madisha. We are noting and we will definitely take advantage of the invitation, because as I indicated earlier on, we want to make as much impact as possible. I think the numbers that we have presented can be doubled or even tripled if we combine with key stakeholders that have got resources and are doing the same interventions that we are involved in. And then in terms of Proudly South African campaign, we've also noted that, and at our next presentation, we will indicate what kind of involvement, what kind of relationship do we have with Proudly South Africa in terms of saving jobs. It's a good advice. We thank you. And then in terms of training the government workers and the state-owned enterprises, the numbers that we have given is the numbers that we will be targeting as the minimum given the allocated resources. But we do believe that they can be better if we get into a partnership with some of the state-owned enterprises in terms of doing that. But in terms of the amount of fund allocated, we can only do 100, but with partnership we can do better than the 100. And the question that was asked, my colleagues will come with other enterprises that we have helped previously, but what comes to mind to the enterprise, state-owned enterprises that we've helped is Spornet, Eskom, ISCO, and they can add later the number of enterprises that we've also assisted. And then in terms of 100 early warning system, we do an average of 100 per year, and the 100 that we presented is the 100 that we'll be trying to achieve in the current financial year. And in terms of model companies, we do not initiate a company or set up a company, but we are referring to a company that is already there, where we will put interventions in place and showcase it as a company that is successful as a result of our intervention. And then in terms of training educators, we are scaling it over a period of 5 years. Due to our limited resources, we cannot do more than 560 in 1 year, but we are looking at doing it over a period of 5 years. The way we measure ourselves is the number of educators. But what we can also do is to go back and do impact assessment and establish how many learners have benefited as a result of imparting that skill to the educators. And then in terms of SDF, yes, I agree that the number 200 is small, but we have come up with a solution with regard to SDF. We are working with the CITAS. We have already established a relationship with three, and by the end of the year, we will have reached most of them, and that will help us in terms of improving on these numbers. And the three that we have approached are very much keen in terms of supporting us. So certainly, the number that we have shown there will be exceeded. I don't know if there's any question that I have got.
Maybe you'll have dealt with it. Awareness, this awareness campaign for your existence. People must know that you exist. How do you deal with that? Even if you are in this sort of province, you find that it's a very small, you know, a percentage of people that know you, like ourselves, that we have made you, but yeah. How do you deal with that? In your plan now for the 10 years, you want to popularize yourself among the
Okay, one of the strategies that we have embarked on or have been following for the past couple of years was, you know, various partnerships with, for instance, SABC. For a couple of years, they were our media partner. Because productivity is such a abstract concept, and to just sell it to anyone and to get people to buy and understand what you stand for and what you represent could be a bit of a challenge, as opposed to just, you know, selling Coca-Cola. So you've got to find ways which is slightly different from your normal selling of whatever products that you do. So there were educational programs that we deal or developed with SABC. And, for instance, we would get into the SABC education, where we spend a bit of time on that particular program, looking at different aspects of productivity. And these programs, for instance, in the end, would say brought to you by, you know, NPR at the time, or Productivity SA. So we're going back to SABC again this year to look at one of those ways that we can be able to do. The other way that we can be able to to do in terms of creating awareness, however limited, was through National Productivity Month in October. But because of our reach, which was central to Gauteng, Western Cape, and whatever, we tended to do activities around the three provinces. But with the partnerships, for instance, that we have in Limpopo, we've established a solid partnership in government departments, productivity must will no longer be confined to West Area, so we keep adding the different provinces as we go. But there's a need to create national awareness about what productivity is and the importance of what productivity can do, because it happens like that in various other developing economies. So we're hoping that we'll be able to put together something this year. It is in our plans to popularize productivity and what Productivity SA does, so that we're able to create the link between the concept and this institution that drives it. So this year, it's in our plans, Honorable Member, that we are going to be driving that process.
Come on, but I think we'll do that when we look at your annual report, where we can then look at your, you know, these were your plans and what the rent and sense that we give you. Does it worth it? You know, the money that we give you, what, 26 million? That we give you? 29 million? Yeah. So that 29 million, we want to tell you spend it. No? You may need more, in fact, of that, or you may need less, but want to see that program. I can see your strategic plan is very clear here. I'm just trying to build up something for me to begin to understand you. You need to be known. You need to feel you in the Northwest, in KwaZulu-Natal, in those villages. And you will say that we are present in KwaZulu-Natal, in KwaZulu-Natal, but you find that you are only in Durban. It's a Maritzburg, Newcastle, in the rural area of Nganda. They may not know you. In the Northwest, in the rural area of Pilablo, you know, where there are a lot of power shops there.
what is the impact of the small business method? You know, it's only big industries that benefit, or even ordinary smaller shops there. In the townships, all the shops are closing down. I'm just making an example. And I may not know how much impact your role there. You know, there's this thing. In all villages, it may not be within the jurisdiction, but if you go to any village today in South Africa, the shops that used to be occupied by Wau Dlamini, what was called in the village where you grew up, for example, is now occupied by some guy from Bangladesh or Pakistan. And they're running that shop there. The product they sell there, you can't find it in Jamaica. They have their own chain of supply, you know, of product coming outside the country that goes to that shop. Mahmoud Lamin has rented out that shop. Every month they pay him $100 a month. And there are many of them because of Lamin. Our intervention there, I'm just looking at the role that you play and how much you can interact to do in the absence of nobody. That you can come in and close that space and be able to, you know, to contribute in helping our people to sustain those small businesses in those areas. In that way, we're able to create more jobs and more jobs and money that circulates within the country. The problem is that with all of the shops, the money does not stay in the country, it leaves the country. It goes to underground market, it leaves the country. It goes to Pakistan, it goes to Bangladesh, and they convert it into dollars, and it leaves the country. But with our own people there, you are able to create more jobs and money will circulate. You never come across anybody from Bangladesh in the bank, or a Chinese man in the bank. You'll never see them. You never, unless you tell me something else. You'll never see them in the bank. So I'm saying that I think the task is big. But as we engage, I think we'll be able to unpack and look at the relevance of this. And I still believe very strongly that it's very relevant. But we just have to expand it, you know, and then give it more resources to be able to intervene with it.
Honorable Charles, I know that you used to be a driver, now you just talk without asking.
In terms of the expansion of our SMMEs, one of the key challenges is that it's quite difficult to treat them as individuals. It's not cost effective. But what I'm able to report today is that with the assistance of that we got from the honorable members in January, where they encourage Umsobomvu to enter into partnership with Productivity SA, that will be entering into partnership at the end of this month. Where we will be looking at a two-year program that will be assisting the SMMEs, so that will be expansion program. We have not put it here because the funds have not been secured, but we are quite confident that the number of SMMEs to be reached will be increased significantly.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to add on that point of the targets that the honorable member said they look low. I work from the Department of Labor, but as he introduced me earlier on, that I'm also a board member of the productivity. Yes, we have talked about that, but we have realized that if the lower resources, the issue is the productivity SA was found on, not according to legislation, 4 years back. It was the Article of Association that was drawn in 1975 was not actually allowing productivity SA to grow in terms of resources. That is why last year the development that was made was that productivity SA was included now in the Skills Development Act. So it is now a part of that act, which also create another issue there, because the skills development functions are still in their discussions regarding transfer of those functions to the Department of Higher Education and Training. So that is another thing, I can say that maybe if or when it goes, then it means productivity essay may also go to report to that department and maybe to another portfolio committee. But we had already done a lot to try to improve it so that it gets a more reach. The targets were even discussed that they need to be increased as the funding comes on that. The issue of the FDF, that is a task or a target that is pursued not only by productivity SA, but the speakers also have that task. For instance, for last year, we in total we have trained about 20,000 of these FDFs. So the part that comes from productivity essay is just a small amount as compared to the whole picture that has been covered in those areas. Oh yes, yeah, I just wanted to say those points that we had as the Department of Labor tried to attend to those constraints that productivity SA experience. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I'm interested here to find out from productivity SA, out of their turnaround interventions, are they also able to tell us part of the youth and women-owned companies that they have been able to assist or bring along or impart some of the skills? And also, I'm interested in knowing, I don't know if you have it on your report, your medium and long-term strategic plans, so that we can educate ourselves and see some of the things that you have outlined in this presentation, how or when are they going to be realized or achieved?
With regard to turnaround solutions of the social plan, I want to acknowledge that it's more of a reactive approach than a proactive approach. We are not able to pick and choose the companies that we are assisting. But be that as it may, one of the things we encourage is that in those instances where companies are white-owned, we encourage BEE, and where those there's no balance of gender, we encourage them to transform, and we tell them about the importance of doing that in terms of sustainability. The interventions that look at correcting the imbalance with regard to SMEs, we consciously target SMEs that are women-driven as well as youth-driven. And with regard to the youth aspect, that will be taken care of mainly in the current financial year with the huge funding and the support that we'll be getting from UMSAPOMF. And then with regard to the medium-term plan, we do have it and we have submitted it. We do have a sense of where we would want to be in 3 years' time with the funding allocation.
Honorable Marcelle.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I would like want to make a correction to Productivity SA that don't have a sort of youth fund anymore. We've got the National Youth Development Agency.
Does the agreement still stand?
Yes, the agreement does stand.
To claim that the money is still there, only to find that the
No, there is no disagreement. The date has, the launch has been set, and the reason why the date for the launch is after a particular date, which is the 16th of June, they wanted to adopt the logo so that when they do the launch, then it must be under the new name. Yeah. So the reason why I was referring to Msobong is that when we started the negotiations, they were Msobong. But the subsequent changes, as far as we were made to understand, have not threatened the agreement.
Okay. Just one clarity. You said it is not possible to establish yourselves in other provinces. Because, is it because you have satellites, or is it because of resources?
What we've indicated is that it's feasible for us to use the resources while located in Gauteng to reach the provinces. But in terms of cost effectiveness, with the limited funding that we are having, it's not feasible that we establish offices in other provinces. If you were to try that in the short term, you will have offices but less delivery as the cost will be absorbed by it. You will see a radical reduction in the targets if we were to do that at a go. But if you gradually do that, you will be able to sustain the targets and still be able to establish yourself in the provinces. What I was doing is that I was commenting on what was said by the CEO of CMA, who indicated that it's much cheaper to save a job than to create one. So I was referring on the comparison between job creation and sustaining the existing job. If you're dealing with an existing job, there's already trained management, there's infrastructure, there's product, research has already been done. So what you may have to go in there and do is to deal with the issue of maybe the company is underfunded, or they are having challenges with the marketing or productivity improvement. So in terms of doing those interventions are less costly than to come up with a new idea, create the infrastructure for the new company. And even in terms of the time, what we have experienced, because we've done few of the job creations, is that it takes a shorter period to turn around the company than to establish a new one.
End of our discussion. Wish to thank you for your patience to be here till this time. And once more apologies for confusion for the lunch, or us not being able to offer you some lunch. Promise that in future that will not happen. There were apologies that were made by GA before lunch that they would not be available for this session. And one member of the NSC. So it's not because they have no respect to undermine, but at least they've given us the apology. So with those few words, go well, and the meeting is adjourned.